American woman. It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and man, do we have a lot of things to talk about today. We'll be talking with former State Senator Kevin Lundberg in the second segment regarding the effects of this Senate Bill 181 that basically is shutting down oil and gas development here in Colorado. And then we'll chat with Rob Nadelson in segments 3 and 4. He's got a couple of different op-eds out there that are pretty important. One is about this ex post facto impeachment standard. It violates the Constitution. And then another one is why founder James Wilson supported the Electoral College over a national popular vote. So we guarantee that you'll have a lot more information at the end of this hour. But great show. So as we look at these issues, we look at them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Ultimately, socialism comes down to force. It's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, or their freedom via force, whether it is with a weapon, policy, or unpredictable and excessive taxation. If something is a good idea, then you really don't need to have force to implement it. And we are seeing the socialization of things that have really make our lives better, like transportation, education, energy, housing, water, broadband, and data. And we need to push back on that, because when things are able to compete in the free market, things get better. When government gets involved, the supply goes down, the cost goes up, and the quality is suspect many, many times. So thank you to producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie for your support and your good work. We are, 9 days out for Christmas? Steve, do you have your Christmas shopping done?
What Christmas shopping? I don't start until the 24th.
That's right. You go by the mall on the 24th, and there's all these men there. It cracks me up. So I can't believe Christmas is here. Spring is right around the corner as fast as time is going.
I think back, I don't know what year it was now, they go by too fast. Tim Allen's first Santa Claus movie, one of the most depressing aspects of that movie was the guys, and maybe his character was one of them, doing their shopping on the 24th. It was, oh.
It is funny. You know, I think I'll just go over to the mall on the 24th just to watch. I think it'll be fun. Okay, I just about have my Christmas shopping done. So there you have it. Thank you to each of you listeners. You are treasured. You are valued. You have a purpose. You go out there today, take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body, and strive for excellence. And I really appreciate all of you. You can check out my website. There is all kinds of great information there. That is kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And you can email me at kimmunson.com as well. And podcasts of the show, now they're easy to find on the website. And so those are all there as well. So today, our inspiration, since we'll be talking with Rob Nadelson regarding founder James Wilson. And James Wilson, he was born in 1742. He died in 1798. He was one of the founding fathers of the United States and a signatory of the United States Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. You know, that's pretty unique, Steve, to be a signer on both those.
Yeah, I mean, with I don't know. Yes, they knew. I guess my mind is not fully focused on the week, so that has dawned already after such a weekend. But they knew the importance of what they were doing, and you know, to have that responsibility and maybe that privilege twice.
It's pretty amazing. And he was elected twice to the Continental Congress, where he represented Pennsylvania, and was a major force in drafting the United States Constitution. A leading legal theorist, he was one of the 6 original justices appointed by George Washington to the Supreme Court of the United States. And James Wilson said this, he said, "Law and liberty cannot rationally become the objects of our love unless they first become the objects of our knowledge." Okay, Steve, we talk about it all the time. We need to know we need to know why we believe what we believe. Right back there, he died in 1798. We need to know our Constitution. We need to know the Declaration. That's one of the reasons why we do this show, is to bring forth these issues and hopefully, you know, look at these with wisdom and knowledge. Okay, Steve, moving right along, I've got some funnies for you. Are you ready?
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Number one, did you know that stressed is just desserts spelled backwards?
Yes, I believe I heard that. And actually, one causes the other.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, speaking of that, this is December 16th. And December 16th, 1944, 75 years ago, was Battle of the Bulge. And you made me think of that because we were talking about Battle of the Bulge the other day. And you said, is that the one around all these Christmas parties? And there is that, but there is the real serious one.
Yeah, don't let my sick sense of humor take anything away from the real Battle of the Bulge.
The real Battle of the Bulge. And this was, we were protecting a really, really long line. Very, very cold. And Hitler was getting close to being defeated, and we had done a really good job destroying his fuel depots and his supply lines, and he needed to get more fuel, and so he made this last ditch effort to try to get to Antwerp, Belgium, and it was a 40-day battle. There was almost 500,000 Allied soldiers and almost 450,000 German soldiers. 40 days. The foxholes, it was so cold they couldn't dig foxholes. They used snow to make their foxholes. And, on my World War II project, in fact, yesterday's show was Lou Zobe, and he was just a young kid, and he was there at Battle of the Bulge. And Bastogne, I think it was the 101st Airborne, got surrounded there. They couldn't get supplies to them. The skies we couldn't fly for a number of days. And then finally the skies cleared, and we were able to get to supplies to the guys in Bastogne. But today, 75 years ago, the Battle of the Bulge began 40 days, if you can believe it, in bitter, bitter cold. 40 days outside in the bitter cold. Can you even imagine it, Steve?
A little bit of a visual that goes with this in terms of that phrase, the Battle of the Bulge. Almost every movie that touches on this subject will show the generals and the military planners standing around a big map looking at the German push westward again, northwestward, and on the map, I mean, it literally was a big bulge.
Uh-huh.
And yes, it was appropriately named.
And amazingly, our guys held. And as you mentioned, yes, when you look on the map, it is a bulge that goes out around the line that we were trying to protect. And our guys held, and it is absolutely amazing. So I would really suggest that you look some information up about Battle of the Bulge. You might go and listen to the show. I'm going to have next week, I'm going to have another Wayne Field, who was was there as well as a young guy at Battle of the Bulge. So these are really important things to remember. So anything else you want to say about that, Steve?
Well, no, I think go out and do a little research on it and enlighten yourself.
And just realize, as we are with our families and are able to celebrate Christmas in freedom, it is because there are those that have put their lives on the line. And 75 years ago today, a bunch of Americans did that, and our hats are off to them. And we need to stop and say thank you. So I know that I put that in between all of my funnies, but it just made me think of that. So, okay.
All right. Stressed and desserts. What's next?
Number two. I bought my son a fridge for Christmas. I can't wait to see his face light up when he opens it.
That's so bad.
And when you stop believing in Santa Claus is when you start getting clothes for Christmas. And if you're wondering what to do for Christmas, actually Hooters restaurants can help you out. They can their wings can spice up any holiday party. And you can shop at Hooters for a variety of things. You can purchase Hooters gift cards, receive $5 free in Santa Bucks. Their merchandise makes great stocking stuffers. And you can place your catering order now for the holidays. You know, when the girls come over, they love that buffalo shrimp. And in fact, I'm going to have some people over next Sunday evening, and so that's what we're going to have at my house. So be sure and go to my website And you can just click on the sponsors, and that'll take you to the Hooters website there and landing page. And I would highly recommend that to let them help you out as you are preparing for your holiday parties. Okay, number two, January 8th, right around the corner, it's our Stand for Colorado rally. It is actually 3 weeks from Wednesday, if you can believe it, Steve. We've got Christmas, and then we've got New Year's, and then we've got the Stand for Colorado rally. And it is really important to show up and let these legislators know that we are watching them. It's the first day of the legislative session. You can go to standforcolorado.com. On Wednesday, we will be letting you know who our speakers are. We have 15 amazing women of the West that will be speaking, and we will be letting you know, it's a secret until Wednesday, on who they all are. And then on January 13th is our first salon series, The Punches to Knock Down Democratic Socialism, with Helen Raleigh and Dr. Paul Prentice. And I've got the Eventbrite just about ready. If you're interested in it, just email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Okay, let's go ahead and jump in here. My first, well, let's go to your top radar, and that is on the national or international stage. Boris Johnson very significantly won the election in Great Britain this last few days.
Yes, so the Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn.
Mm-hmm.
And what I saw, what caught my eye, is that the people who look at these things and really look for the significance and saying, look out, liberals, this could be a bellwether
mm-hmm.
bellwether,
mm-hmm.
or the canary in a coal mine of what might be coming.
Mm-hmm. And this was from Fox News. The title is Corbyn's Bloodbath Defeat in the UK Election Sends Catastrophic Warning to the 2020 Dems. It says Jeremy Corbyn saw, and he's very left-wing, saw his party mauled in Britain's general election Thursday as its strongholds across the country fell to Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Conservative Party, a dramatic result that commentators on both sides of the pond are seeing as a warning to socialist-leaning Democrats ahead of the U.S. presidential election. And for those who have openly cautioned about the party's drift to the left, the UK results were treated as nothing short of a wake-up call. A sign for some that even a populist incumbent as irreverent and contentious as Johnson could ride to victory when the alternative is an equally controversial leftist vowing massive government expansion. The parallels were not hard to draw.
I love it. I can't get enough of that kind of stuff, because when these people stop and take a look at the fact that the working classes, the middle class of any country, is just tired of being pummeled by these mindsets, this socialism and or this extreme leftist viewpoint is the way to go.
And it is not. And so I think this could really be, as you mentioned, a prediction of what might happen in 2020. But what that means is we have a lot of work to do, because we are Americans. 75 years ago, Americans stood up against tyranny and evil as they were fighting Hitler and the Nazis. Nazi, remember, Steve, stands for National Socialist German Workers' Party. And socialism ultimately has to come down to force. One other thing I wanted to mention before we go to break. Patty does such an amazing job on all of this research. Colorado received over $6 million in public broadcasting funds last year. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting allocated $6 million plus in fiscal year 2018 to support public television and radio in Colorado, the 23rd highest amount among the 50 states and the District of Columbia. The CPB is a private, nonprofit corporation that oversees the federal government's financial support for public television, radio, and related online and mobile services. Now, just get this. We've got a bunch of government money that a nonprofit oversees. The CPB support for public broadcasting includes grants and other types of allocations for television programming, community service radio, and other functions of the public broadcasting system. It is the largest single source of such funding. The question on the table is how can you have a free press if, in fact, they are living off of government money? And these we need to get government money out of this broadcasting business. I purchase my time for both of my shows, and the reason is so that I have full journalistic control of what we say. If you don't like what I have to say, fine. You can just go ahead and turn the dial. but it's not fair. That we're not competing on an even playing field. And so over $6 million, that's a pretty good marker for anything. And I would suggest that we need to have a free press, not a press that is living off of government money. But what is astounding is Virginia, if you can believe this, Steve, received almost $123 million last year in these corporate broadcasting funds. That is significant. Your quick comment.
Well, the list that are the way this article is presented to us, there's a list of by state the funds that were dispersed. Virginia's at the top of the stack, $122 million, and I'm scratching my head and saying why, but yet I know enough about the politics going on there, and I think that pretty much describes why.
Well, and the District of Columbia received over $32 million, so I mean. Wow, that's a lot. But let's go to break because we have Kevin Lundberg, former state senator Kevin Lundberg, on the line. And there was a big meeting earlier last week regarding the effects of Senate Bill 181, which is that very, very detrimental Senate bill that was passed by this legislature, signed by the governor, and what it does to oil and gas development here in Colorado. Apparently, Senator Lundberg and his colleagues are trying to figure out what the impacts might be. Let's go to break. We'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Butter Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
It's the most wonderful. Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. And on the line, I have with me Senator Kevin Lundberg. Before we go to Senator Lundberg, though, one of the listeners, Susan, just alerted me that today is also the Boston Tea Party anniversary, 1773. So Battle of the Bulge started and the Boston Tea Party. And we have on the line with us Senator, former State Senator Kevin Lundberg. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. And if we're talking about anniversaries, yesterday was the anniversary for the ratification of the Bill of Rights.
Aha! Boy, there was a lot going on around this time of year, wasn't there?
Yeah. Well, that was back in 1791, but who's counting?
Yeah, you know, one quick thing on that, Senator Lundberg. James Madison, in order to get, my understanding is, in order to get the Constitution ratified, there were people out there that wanted this Bill of Rights. And Madison basically assured them that if, in fact, they ratified the Constitution, that they would make sure that that happened. And amazingly, he kept his word, right?
Yep, that was a good thing. Those were the anti-federalists, essentially. And actually, what we'll discuss here this morning has a lot to do with those Bill of Rights. That's one reason I bring it up.
Okay. Well, there was a meeting last week. This Senate Bill 181, the people of Colorado had spoken that they did not want to shut down oil and gas development here in Colorado. And right. And then the next thing we know is that Governor Polis gets into office, the new legislature convenes, and in the last legislative session, they passed Senate Bill 181, which in essence, to my understanding, closes down or really shuts down or makes it very difficult for oil and gas development here in Colorado.
Well, and yeah, let me explain it this way. With the measure that the people rejected, that was a specific setting of setbacks and other things that very obviously we're going to shut down oil and gas in most of the state. For Senate Bill 181, what they did is they changed the mission for the the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, which is the legal group that issues the drilling permits. And they said, now you've got to do everything according to what is health and safety, which, you know, we're all for health and safety. But in fact, that those are code words for we don't like fracking. We want fracking shut down because it's really not dangerous, but it's seen as dangerous by some. Anyway, that means that it's the regulations that they're now working on, both through the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission and also the Air Quality Control Commission. They're all putting in place regulations because of what 181 set down that is telling the oil and gas industry to leave the state, and that's what they're doing. So I've been hearing a lot of details about that, but I thought somebody needs to pull this all together into one cohesive package. And that's why, as the executive director for the Republican Study Committee, I endeavored to hold this hearing down at the Capitol last week, and it was a five-hour event where we had people from oil and gas and air quality control and economists come in and tell us what they know about the true impacts, what's really happening as a consequence of Senate Bill 181.
What did you find out?
Well, from the people who represent the industry directly, they said, that investors are not loaning money to oil and gas projects, to new drilling operations, because they don't have the confidence that they'll be able to follow through with it. The permits that are being issued by the commission have dropped to just a fraction of what they were before. And my suspicion is those that they are issuing at this point are those that were in the pipeline already. And they've said that long-term, even though there are literally thousands of permit applications out there, that they hope to be working on a few dozen every month. And then when you look at the companies, particularly the smaller operations, they are leaving the state. Or one declared bankruptcy some time ago, in other words, a few months ago. And within their bankruptcy papers, they said, we cannot operate in this new legal environment that what 181 sets up. Now, we also had, that's kind of the bad news, and that's just a you know, real general snapshot of 5 hours of discussion. But we had people from the mineral interest owners come and speak too. There's an association, it's called CAMRO, Colorado, owners of mineral interests and royalties or something like that. I'm not mm-hmm. getting their name right. But they said, now hold on a little bit, because after the session was over, the United States Supreme Court came down with a decision, and it had to do with a landowner in Pennsylvania, and it wasn't directly associated with oil and gas, but there a regulation in Pennsylvania told this lady that she had to keep her property open to the public because there was an ancient cemetery on the, you know, it's just wooded land. And anyway, she took that all the way through the courts and said, I can't do this, and I don't think that the government has the authority to do this without compensating me for this new regulation that they're forcing me through. And the Supreme Court, in no uncertain terms, said, yes, here's where the Bill of Rights comes in. The Fifth Amendment does apply, even if it's a government regulation, and this is the key element, because we've been on that all along, but the standard had been you take it through the state courts. And the state courts are generally, particularly here in Colorado, set up so that these regulations they get away with. They, you know, they can devalue your land or your property interest to almost nothing, and not be held liable for it. Well, and then if you took it to federal court, the federal courts had a policy that's saying, well, whatever the state said is what we'll abide by. So you were caught in this catch-22. Anyway, I know it's a lot of detail, but it's a very critical issue here. The U.S. Supreme Court said, no, that's not right. You should be able to take these interests, these concerns directly to federal court.
Wow.
And when it comes to the federal court, the Fifth Amendment is what we abide by. Justice Thomas, in his comments, I'm paraphrasing this just a little bit, said, doesn't really matter what it's going to cost the state. So be it. What we're paying attention to is the Fifth Amendment, which says if the government takes any property from you, they must give you just compensation, and that includes regulations. They did discuss it that way. So most legal experts look at this and say, this is a game changer. This means that if the state steps in and does like what they did with 181, that if you had some value that had been taken from you because of that, you could go to a local, county or city or the state and sue them for those damages.
Wow. That is a game changer.
Yeah, it really is. And it has yet to be pushed through the courts. But the people from Camro, the mineral interest owners, they assured us that they were preparing those lawsuits as we speak.
Wow.
And then finally, we asked them the question. We'd kind of been poking around with a lot of the experts on, so how much value are we talking about here? And their rough estimate was in the trillions of dollars, which that seems almost unbelievable, but they went to some other specifics, and they said for a section of ground, which is 640 acres, it's 1 mile square, that if this is an oil-producing property, that the estimates are somewhere in the hundreds of millions of dollars of actual value of mineral interests on that property.
Wow. Senator Lumberg.
Yeah.
Well, we're just about out of time, but the other thing that you're mentioning here is about the mineral rights of these people. But these mineral owners and oil and gas has paid significant taxes to the state of Colorado, which has gone to schools and roads and, all
Excellent
kinds of things.
Point.
And yes. So when we're talking about the health and safety, quote unquote, of our communities, what about, the things that we think are important that are we use our tax dollars? And the other thing is the electricity went out in my neighborhood last week, or the power went out. And my neighbor called, and she said, the house is getting cold because we don't have any energy. What about the health and safety and well-being of people when they have affordable, reliable, and efficient energy?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I actually neglected to really cover that when the industry goes away, tens of thousands of jobs go away, billions, literally billions of dollars of tax revenue go away. And one economist said, when it comes to the extractive industries like this, that there's a multiplication within the economics of it of about three or four, which means you take out 1,000 jobs in oil and gas, and you probably lose 3,000 or 4,000 jobs elsewhere also. So, yeah, this is just unbelievably huge to everybody. And yet, I understand the governor last summer when he was asked by at a big oil and gas convention, so is this having any effect? And he said, no, I don't think it's.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Kevin, we're going to go to break here, but just a quick kind of snarky comment on my part. These PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties say that they're concerned about road congestion and affordable housing. Well, You shut down a whole industry. That's probably going to alleviate congestion on our roads, and it's probably going to bring the value of houses down, too. Quick, your last comment, and we'll go to break.
You're absolutely correct.
Okay. Kevin, yeah. We need to have a much longer conversation on this, but, wanted to get you on because this just happened, so we'll get you rescheduled then.
And I'm glad to have just a moment to give you a brief snapshot. It's going to take me a long time to really dig through all of this to consolidated, but I plan on making this available and out there as much as possible.
Okay, and how do people get the Lumberg Report very quickly?
very quickly go to my website, kevinlundberg.com, and just give me your email address, and we'll send you out the information as we start to developing it on this.
Very good. Very important information. So, Senator Lundberg, thank you so much. And we'll actually build a show around this as well, but this was kind of late breaking, and we wanted to get you on.
Yep, very good. Thanks, Kim. Appreciate it.
You bet. And before we go to break, Jason McBride is back. You know, John Buckingham did such a great job for presidential wealth management. You know what? I hope that Jason isn't concerned about that.
He did. Yeah. And, man, and John, by his own admission, was not an early riser. So, he was pretty sharp. So Mr. McBride has a lot to step up to the plate over.
Hi, Jason. How are you?
That's good. I know Buck's good. And I told Jeff last week when he said he was coming on, it was going to be an upgrade for your listeners. Sounds like I was right.
We are glad to have you back. So we were just talking with former State Senator Kevin Lundberg about oil and gas. We'll be talking with Rob Nadelson here in the next couple of segments. But we've missed you. So what's on your mind this morning?
Well, it's funny, when you talk to Kevin Lundberg, I got to thinking, you know, maybe they could figure out how to make one of those windmills spit out tax dollars.
Well, you know what? They're sucking tax dollars in instead of spitting them out.
Yeah, well, you know, I figure after, you know, a day and a half when they filled up, you know, one AA battery with electricity, we ought to be able to put them to another use, right?
I tell you, it's amazing. So.
But, that whole thing is interesting, Kim. You know, when new politicians get elected, such as our governor, you kind of watch and see what they're going to do, even if they're on the other side. You know, I tend to, okay, well, let's give this guy a chance or this gal a chance and see what they'll do. And you usually get your answer pretty quick. And as I've told you before, as soon as they turned around and shoved through this stuff with the oil and gas right in the face of the voters who said, we don't want this, that was pretty much it for me. I think that laid the groundwork and, as you would like to say, took the mask off and showed exactly mm-hmm. what their intentions were and that they didn't respect the voters at all. So they don't care what the people want.
You know, and I was doing research over the weekend because we're going to have Rob Nadelson on here in just a little bit. And our founding fathers, they intended for government to deliberate ideas. And, what's happening down at the State House, and you're seeing this actually in city councils and school boards and Dr. Cog and county commissioners, they want to rubber stamp things. They want everybody to agree on that, and that is not the American idea. So your final thought on that, Jason, and then we're going to go to break.
Well, Mr. Lundberg mentioned one other thing, and it makes sense with business. He said a lot of investors and lenders don't want to invest money or lend money to certain oil and gas projects, and that's a way that a government that doesn't like an industry, mm-hmm. It's just one of the side effects that they're aware of when they start legislating it half to death and putting regulations that are impossible. They know that the flow of capital will also dry up, or they'll have to pay such exorbitant interest rates that it makes it difficult to do business.
Right.
And if you don't think that's on purpose for one moment, I think you're pretty naive.
Yeah, government picking winners and losers, and that is not the proper role of government. Now, Jason, one other thing. This is the week before Christmas. People mm-hmm. need to be thinking about year end, and this would be the week to sit down with you and John Buckingham and your colleagues over at Presidential Wealth Management to do a discovery session. So give Natalie a call at 7:30 at the switchboard. She's 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Or check out airpresidential.com. That's airpresidential.com. Jason, thank you so much. I love talking with John, and it's also nice to have you back.
Okay, thank you, Kim. Have a good show.
Okay, thanks so much. We're going to go to break. And Rob Nadelson, he has two very important pieces that were in Complete Colorado. You can see him in the Epic Times as well. And so we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim@kimmunson.com.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's kimmunson.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. We have on the line with us Rob Nadelson. You know him. He served as a law professor for 25 years and is a nationally known constitutional scholar. He's a senior fellow at the Independence Institute in Constitutional Jurisprudence, and he is the author of The Original Constitution, What It Actually Said and Meant. And Rob, welcome to the show.
It's good to be back. By the way, I wish I were a junior fellow, but in fact, I'm a senior fellow.
Oh, did I say junior? Oh, yeah. My gosh. And the word right here is senior. I don't know what I meant. You know what I think it was? Is I was looking, you know, I always have a hard time with jurisprudence. So I was like, oh, am I going to pronounce that correctly?
Junior jurisprudence.
Yeah, yeah. So, yes, you are a senior fellow in constitutional jurisprudence. So
the audience might like to know what this is about. Think tanks customarily have people on their faculty who are called fellows. It's actually a translation from an earlier word that was used in Latin, back when Latin was the dominant academic language. And so scholars associated with think tanks are generally called fellows. Those that have, in some ways, are judged to have proven themselves in life, have extensive reputations, are called senior fellows.
Okay.
And usually those of us who are senior fellows are also senior citizens.
Well, I think you're a junior citizen. How's that? I'm not going to give your age, okay?
Okay, good.
So, actually, I wanted to get through a couple of different things that you have published. We got a little, it was important to get Kevin and Lumberg on there, and that was important information as well. So let's try to get through these, but you write extensively. You have been referred to or quoted, or I don't know what the proper term is, by judges throughout the country, as well as even on the Supreme Court. They've looked to your work, so it's pretty important. But you'd written this piece. It was first in the Epoc Times, and folks can find it at Complete Colorado. And that was, the title is, Why Founder James Wilson Supported the Electoral College Over a National Popular Vote. So explain this, Rob Nadelson.
Well, after it appeared in the Epoc Times, I looked at the comments section under it, which I usually don't do. And the first comment was by some guy who said, James Wilson, never heard of him. And unfortunately, that's true of a lot of Americans. James Wilson was a Scot. He was born actually in Fife, part of Scotland. He attended St. Andrews University, where, trivia alert, my middle daughter also received her degree.
Oh, cool.
And St. Andrews is very famous as a center of Presbyterianism, as a matter of fact. Anyway, he studied at St. Andrews, and he was one of nine children, but he was recognized as a child of extraordinary promise. So his parents, who were farmers, basically middle class or lower middle class, struggled to give him an opportunity, his education, and then they sent him to America. And based upon his educational achievement, he was given a lectureship at what is now the University of Pennsylvania, and soon entered the law office of John Dickinson, who at that time, you know, many people may recognize Dickinson's name, also an outstanding founder and the leading lawyer in Pennsylvania at the time. So he was educated in Dickinson's office, opened his practice, became fairly wealthy, was elected to the Continental Congress, and was chosen one of the framers at the for the Constitutional Convention. At the Constitutional Convention, he is generally credited with being the second most important delegate in overall contribution,
wow,
next to James Madison.
Okay.
And at the convention, he made several remarks that some people have cited as claiming that James Wilson favored national popular vote, that he just wanted a direct election by the people in order to elect the president. And modern advocates of national popular vote often quote his remarks. As often happens here, and in fact we saw this with the so-called expert impeachment panel, people who get into the founding era record often don't know what they're talking about. They look very superficially, and in fact, James Wilson was not really for national popular vote. He was for a system of indirect election, similar to what came out of the convention, the Electoral College. And so I wrote the column essentially confirming that this great founder is not somebody that the national popular vote people should be citing, that in fact he was a supporter of the Electoral College.
Well, truth has never constrained people that are trying to use the Constitution to put forward their, you know, their particular agenda. I found it actually, Rob, just astounding how kind of some of these radical activists are now running around quoting the Constitution, when what I've seen is they have been stomping all over the Constitution.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, they use the Constitution when it suits them. But also, a lot of people who have reputations as constitutional scholars and who write on the Constitution don't really have historical training. They don't really have training in some of the areas necessary to understand the founding era. And as I mentioned, you saw this with two of the people who were trotted out as experts in the impeachment hearings. These people had never written about the Constitution. I'm referring particularly to Professor Carlin and Professor Feldman. They are both respectable scholars in other areas, but they'd never written about impeachment, I should say. And it showed. Their approach to impeachment was very superficial. Kim, this is why I wrote the book, The Original Constitution, What It Actually Said and Meant, was in order to give the average person a handbook to the Constitution to correct a lot of the superficialities that you hear about the document.
You know, that is such an important book. You know, as we're coming into the holidays, you know, there are some, I think people should take some time and read some of these very important books. And your book is, in particular, as we are going into 2020, I think that is one of the first things people should make sure that they read. Maybe that should be their New Year's resolution, is to read your book, The Original Constitution, What It Said and What It Meant.
Now, here's a good example of superficiality and understanding of James Wilson. Wilson is often cited in the Constitutional Convention as saying that he favored election by the people. But Wilson, because he was a Scot, and in Scotland, they elected members of Parliament indirectly. They elected electors called commissioners who then elected the members of Parliament. He thought of indirect election as election by the people. And if you read what he says carefully in the course of the Constitutional Convention, he considered indirect election to be election by the people, and he became a huge supporter of the method that the Constitution adopted, including the Electoral College, not just in the time immediately following the Constitutional Convention, but also in his famous lectures on law, in which he provided an oversight of the American legal and constitutional system.
Fascinating.
By the way, Wilson went on to become a justice of the United States Supreme Court. So we're talking about a really heavy hitter here.
A very heavy hitter. And it's astounding that you said the first comment when this was published at the Epoch Times was somebody said they didn't even know who he was. Instead of admitting
that's
that,
right,
maybe they might have found out who he was. But hey, Rob, let's go to break. I want to talk about this other piece that you have ex post facto impeachment standard violates the Constitution. Again, you can find that at Complete Colorado, but it was originally published in Town Hall. And I'd like you to let our listeners know what you meant in this as well. So this is Kim Munson. I have Rob Nadelson, senior fellow at the Independence Institute, and constitutional expert on the line. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Denver, and the historic 88 Drive-In Theater for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today at KimMunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, KimMunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. On the line with me is Rob Nadelson. He is a constitutional expert. And his book, The Original Constitution, What It Actually Said It Meant, should be on your shopping list this Christmas. And let's talk about this other piece that was recently published, Rob. It's in Complete Colorado. It was originally in Town Hall. Ex post facto impeachment standard violates the Constitution. What does that mean exactly?
Well, ex post facto refers in particular to a law which is made up after somebody has done something and then declared it an offense. So, for example, let's say that, let's say that Kim Munson was visiting Macy's yesterday, and then the state legislature passes a law retroactively saying that attending Macy's is a crime. That's an example of an ex post facto law.
Interesting.
Well, the House Judiciary Committee issued a report in which it said that we really can't define standards of impeachment. The record is too vague. And so what we have to do is we have to look at what the president did and collect all the facts, and then we decide whether his conduct is impeachment.
Aha!
So instead of outlining the standards in advance and judging the president by those, they decide retroactively that the president has committed an impeachable offense. Now, I think I know where they're getting this. I mentioned that there were two of the three Democratic appointees to the expert panel had written nothing on impeachment. The one who had, Michael Gerhardt, had years ago wrote articles in which he essentially said that impeachable offenses are really difficult or can't be defined. Well, that's not true. It's simply not true. The impeachable offenses, as outlined by the Constitution, are treason, bribery, other high crimes, and misdemeanors. And what that means is felonies and high misdemeanors, which in turn means breach of fiduciary duty. And the standards for breach of fiduciary duty or breach of trust are pretty well defined in our law, and they were defined well in the law of the founding era, too. They're fairly similar. I was just give you an indication what my bedtime reading is, Kim. Last night I was rereading the debates over the Constitution in the North Carolina Convention, which considered whether to ratify the Constitution. And there were statements by James Iredell, another great founder who went on to the U.S. Supreme Court, and William Davey, who was a delegate to the Constitutional Convention. And they were actually outlining pretty clearly what they believed impeachable offenses are. Breach of trust or abuse of trust, which means breach of fiduciary duties or the kinds of duties that are imposed upon people that handle other people's affairs, like bankers and accountants and so forth, or felony. And so the statement by the Judiciary Committee that we can look at what President Trump has done and then, using no particular standards to state whether it's impeachable, is ex post facto. It violates the rule of law. And that is really what my article says.
Okay, hey, a question. Can you impeach a vice president? Is that possible?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Any officer
of the United States can be impeached, and it does not mean a legislator. It does not mean a senator or a representative. That's also clear, pretty clear from the founding era record. But it would include members of the judiciary, members of the cabinet, president, vice president, any other high executive or judicial official.
The reason they say that they're impeaching President Trump is because of this call with the Ukrainian leader back in the summer. And our researcher, Patty, had found information that, in fact, President Clinton, when he was president, had signed an agreement with Ukraine that said on both sides, if there was corruption, that we had a responsibility to check that out. Now, Joe Biden, when he was president, apparently, you know, it's on tape that says that he was going to withhold aid to Ukraine if they did not pull a prosecutor off, which was checking into corruption. And then Joe Biden's son, Hunter, was on this board of Burisma, which was, I think, an oil and gas company in Ukraine. That seems to me like that Biden actually did what they're trying to accuse Trump of. What's your comments on that, Rob?
Well, if Trump is impeachable for what he did, then Joe Biden is certainly impeachable. But I will tell you that I don't think that what Biden did was impeachable. I don't think what Clinton did was impeachable. And his committee of perjury was impeachable, but seeking a quid pro quo from the Ukraine was not. And certainly what President Trump did was not impeachable. Whether somebody violated a fiduciary duty has to be determined in part by what other people in the same office have done and what the nature of the relationship is, what international law is. For years, one of the major complaints about the American foreign aid programs has been that we give foreign aid to corrupt governments, which then misuse it. And so it is a standard requirement of presidential administrations to get assurances from governments that are receiving aid that they will clean up corruption. Now, in the case of Joe Biden, yes, his son served to incidentally benefit from what he was doing, but he was carrying out a wider Obama administration policy against corruption. And even if President Trump stood to perhaps benefit incidentally from an investigation of the Bidens, he was carrying out the kind of policy that's usually carried out in foreign affairs. So I don't think any of this stuff was impeachable. There's also something else, too, Kim, which is important. We have traditionally given our presidents very wide discretion in foreign affairs. There has never, ever been even serious talk about impeaching a president for conduct of foreign affairs, and with very good reason. The nature of the presidency is such that it's designed to be the chief foreign affairs officer, and it has served us well in that capacity. We don't want the president pulling in his horns and not conducting foreign affairs in a robust way because in the future some committee might say ex post facto that what he did was wrong. So it's not something we should be unless the conduct is extremely egregious, like accepting a bribe from a foreign government, which is not the case here, we should not be looking to impeach a president because of foreign affairs.
Wow. And I think this point, we need to make sure we're about out of time, but But your piece, the ex post facto impeachment standard violates the Constitution. If, in fact, we have legislators that are making rules and then making them retroactive for the president, I think we should be very concerned of what that might mean for us. That is not what should happen in the United States of America. Your final thought, Rob Nadelson.
Well, we should be concerned. There are not one but two provisions in the Constitution that forbid either the federal government or the states from adopting ex post facto laws. Now, impeachment is not covered, but it demonstrates the disdain for the rule of law and, frankly, the ignorance about what impeachment is about that the House Judiciary Committee would issue a report like this.
Two nuggets right there. We saw the disdain for the law. And then not knowing?
Just lack of understanding of what impeachment is all about. Look, one of the leading legal sources of the 18th century, which the founders would have read, explicitly said impeachment is only for violation of known law. It's not something you make up as you go along.
Wow. Rob Nadelson, thank you so much. And you can find this at Complete Colorado. It was at Town Hall as well. Your other piece was at the Epic Times. Thank you so much, and wish you a very happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and prosperous 2020.
Thank you. Merry Christmas, Kim.
Okay. And our quote for today is James Wilson. He said, "Government, in my humble opinion, should be formed to secure and to enlarge the exercise of the natural rights of its members, and every government which has not this in view as its principal object is not a government of the legitimate kind." Wow. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, in the American way. God bless you, and God bless America. This is Kim Munson signing off. Out into this great unknown. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
KLZ AM HD Denver, the source AM and FM. AM 560 and 100.7 FM. 560thesource.com.